Accession number 17985, Reel 2.
Mr. Wilson, Reel 2. You were just telling me about dividing up the bread.
Yes. Making sure everybody got the same thickness slice of bread. And breakfast possibly be half a sausage, soya link it was. Or perhaps the next day, a quarter of an ounce of bacon. You ever seen a quarter of an ounce of bacon? God's truth. It was pretty grim. And we used to get an issue of cigarettes. They got terribly reduced. We'd perhaps get about 20 or so for a week, and they were made in India. They were called Pirate. And people would smoke the cigarettes, and they'd be crawling around looking for dog ends later on. However, we managed to get through, and then things improved as time went on.
Excuse me, how did your rations compare with the rations of the Maltese?
Well, of course, I can't. They didn't have much either, but they were entirely divorced from us. We just got our ration. We were mostly on platoon detachments. I was, anyway. Just me and my platoon, let's say, at St. Julian's Bay, in charge of the, with several pillboxes and a series of mines that I could blow up by pulling a lever in case we were invaded. But I can't say civilians, they had a hard time, really and truly. I think the biggest shortage I remember was sort of things like baby milk and things like that for children.
Did you not have much to do with the Maltese civilians?
Oh, yes, you met them all the time. They were mostly very kind and very good. Yes, indeed. Yes, they were very good.
Did you meet any Maltese civilians who were hostile or pro-Axis?
No, there were rumours about some of them, but I never met any. Most of them were very happy to see us there and to talk to us. We made friends with families there, and I did. I went to a wedding there, a Maltese family. The chap was a surgeon in the Royal Navy, but he was a Maltese. And no, lovely wedding. We met lots of Maltese people.
Did any of the soldiers marry Maltese girls?
Well, they frowned on it, rather. They frowned on it very, very much indeed, because they said that it was fine then, but when they got back to England and the weather wasn't nice and it was cold and God knows what not, they nearly always broke up. So every effort was made, I think, to discourage it. But I've no doubt that I don't remember anybody actually marrying. I don't remember anybody actually marrying, not in the battalion anyway. But a lot of them had Maltese girlfriends. Whether anything developed later, I don't know.
Did any bombs fall near you?
Yes, a lot. many terrified. I was there in 1942, and the great rage going on. I saw the first Spitfires come in there, and I can remember all the guns concentrated around the Grand Harbour, and they were firing so many shells that the bursting shells made a cloud. And I watched Stuka pilots coming in, brave men, diving into this cloud to drop their bombs. Some of them hit, some of them getting out. Anyway, it was very rough, especially Easter. Easter 1942, I remember well, was appalling. Appalling.
Where did you shelter then?
We didn't. Well, we had this. During that time, we were living in a private house, and we dug slit trenches in the garden, and we just adjourned to slit trenches and set up the Bren guns on an anti-aircraft tripod and had a shoot as they went by. They used to dive in over the Grand Harbour and come out over us, and we'd have a little blast, you know, and they'd blast back at us with the however, we...
Did you account for any of the enemy?
Oh, we kept hoping we'd hit them, you know. But I saw lots of German planes shot down and streaming smoke. I saw Italian planes. Camps used to come over at a terrible height every day. The ICAC used to engage them, used to watch it. We were all watching for the glint of the bomb coming out to see where they were going to fall. That was the most...
Did you think that the enemy would invade more?
Yes, indeed. Oh, yes, indeed. It was sorry, it was almost a certainty, we thought. And I remember at that time I was platoon commander, but the brigadier sent for me, Ivan de la Baire, Central Infantry Brigade. And when I went to the brigadier, he said, in the event of any invasion, I was to leave my platoon and in charge of Sergeant Gallagher, my platoon sergeant, amazing man, two military medals. He came from Chorley as well. And I had to leave my platoon and go to brigade headquarters. And I would then act as the eyes and ears of the brigadier. They thought communications might be gravely disrupted, and he was to direct me to go and find out anything he wanted to know, and I was to go out and look at places on a motorcycle. And this man by Batman and I were there, a chap named Eric Ellery. He came from Leyland. Poor Eric died a few years ago. And he and I used, we did exercises, and that happened. I used to go to brigade headquarters. He was given a motorcycle, and Ellery used to, my Batman used to come with me. The brigadier was a delightful man. He really and truly was absolutely incredible. He, his wife and daughter were in Malta. The daughter left to go to Alexandra on a ship from Malta. The ship disappeared and she was never heard of again. Anne de la Baire. She was a nice woman. Nice girl. She wasn't a woman, she was a young girl. I think she was going out with an officer of the Cheshire Regiment at the time. Cheshires were there as well. Nobody ever heard of her again. Rumour had it that she'd been captured and she was living with them pirates and on the African coast, you know. Never heard any more. But anyway, the thing was, we went on in Malta until just before the invasion of Sicily.
Did you see any of the famous supply ships come in?
Oh, yes, indeed. God, I watched the Ohio come in, limping in there with the water not 3 feet from the deck. I watched the Ohio come in. The interesting thing is that my son, 6 months ago, was working on a ship travelling from America to Norway, all Italian crew, and it was called the Ohio. And he rang me up to tell me that it was the sister ship, the Ohio, that Ohio, and it was full of pictures of the original Ohio. And I remember that coming into Malta.
What was the morale of your troops like on Malta?
You got used to the bombing. It was a bit terrifying sometimes. The noise was tremendous, and the firing. But you just kept your fingers crossed and hoped for the best. All my platoon were fine. They were great, terrific.
What kind of defence did you think you'd be able to put up if the Germans...
Well, it would be just ordinary infantry platoon. There were lots of troops there in Malta. And it would have been difficult to... I think we'd have been swamped, overrun. The number of probably paratroopers and what have you. And if you'd given a good account, we'd have seen a few off, without a doubt. However...
You were telling me about Operation Husky, the invasion of Sicily.
Oh, yes. Well, I detached again from Fusiliers with a batch of about 7 or 8 men to build camps. We didn't know for this invasion that was due to come off. We didn't know where it was coming off. But we do have big camps and all the supplies. And then... We got all this area sorted. Then Basutu landers came in, troops, and they erected tents.
This is into Malta?
Into Malta. And then when that camp was done, I was then posted to another camp, which was nearer civilization. This was right out in the wilds, the first camp I did. Then I was posted to the second one, and we had all this equipment there. We put tents and things up. And then we got a message that troops would be coming in. And duly, three tonners came up, and the first three tonner that came in, this is God's truth, from the docks into my camp, which I was camp commandant then. The first chap off was a sergeant major in the Black Watch. He came up to me and saluted, and it was a chap named Martin. He was then regimental sergeant major of the 7th Black Watch. But I knew him when he was my company sergeant major at the depot in Perth, Chico Martin. And, of course, the Black Watch came in. And I'd been with the Black Watch. I was absolutely over the moon. I was back to the Black Watch again. They stayed with us for 4 or 5 days. I took James Oliver, who was the battalion commander then, to an O group. The only transport I had was my motorbike, and he had to ride pillion behind me. I took him in for an O group before the invasion. And he had jippy tummy at the time. I remember he was very uncomfortable. However, we went back, and James Oliver said to me, "You should be with us. You should be with the Black Watch." So I said, "Well, I'd dearly like to," because some of the chaps there I'd known in the ranks. Some of the officers had been in the ranks with me, you see. And he said, "I'll see what I can do." And off he went. Monty visited us, and we all gathered round him, etc., in the camp.
What kind of impression did he make?
Oh, a great, great, great morale booster. Yes, made a speech, and wonderful. He felt elated. Although I wasn't going on the invasion, but they all went. They all went. And then I thought, I'd better sort something out about this. So I asked to see my own CO, Colonel Page, DSO, from the 1418 War. Delightful man. And I asked for a transfer to the Black Watch. I remember him saying to me, "Well, now, Wilson, I can understand you, but just remember, we're also serving who are standing and waiting in water." And however, the application duly went, and a signal came from the War Office saying at the moment it was considered inadvisable to transfer officers from one regiment to another. And that was it. 3 days after that, a signal came to Brigadier Ivan de la Baer from
Cairo?
From Cairo, yes, right. From Field Marshal Maitland Wilson, ordering me to be posted to the 7th Battalion Black Watch under arrangements to be made by Brigadier Ivan de la Baer. Right out of the blue. And so I duly left Malta. Sadly, in a way, to leave the 11th Battalion. The Fusiliers are a marvellous regiment. But really, I joined the Black Watch. My father was, and the Black Watch was always my regiment. And I duly left by air from Lucca and to Tunis. And then I got another plane from Tunis to Algiers. I landed at Maison Blanche in Algiers. The airport, and didn't know what the blazes to do. There was nobody there, nothing that I could see. So I hitched a lift with some Americans down into Algiers itself. And the only thing I could do, I went into an American military police post and rang up Supreme Headquarters, Allied Expeditionary Force, and said I'd arrived, and I didn't know what to do. What had happened? There's no indication of what anybody should do. So the duty officer there said, "Oh, I'll send a car." He sent a car down for me. And I duly got up to Supreme Headquarters. And the duty officer was a major in the King's Royal Rifle Corps. And he said he didn't know quite what to do with me. Well, I said, "First of all, I haven't been out of Malta for 2.5 years. I wouldn't mind a few days." So he said, I'll tell you what to do. You go back. He sent me to a hotel in Malta, in Algiers, I beg your pardon, and said, when you're ready to go, come back and see me. So I had about 5 or 6 days in Algiers, swanning round and looking, and hey, it was quite pleasant. And then I'd run out of cash rapidly, so I said, I'd better go to see what's happening. So I went back to the Supreme Headquarters, and he said, well, I haven't any alternative here. He said, I've got to send you to a holding battalion out in the desert. So my travel orders were signed by Sir Henry Maitland Wilson. And I said, well, no way. I said, I'll make my own way to Sicily. Produce my travel orders. And this major looked at them and said, oh, well, you make your own way, but if you haven't done it in a few days, come back here. So I went down to the Mediterranean Air Transport Command in Algiers and walked into the bar there, and I was made very welcome and said I wanted to go to Sicily. And the chap said, oh, I'll take you to Sicily tomorrow morning. Maison Blanche in the morning, and I travelled to Sicily on a DC-3, I think it was, with an American general and a courier. I don't know who the general was. We, just three of us, the pilot, the general, the courier, and myself. And I remember I had a methylated spirits tin, triangular-shaped thing. I'd had it because I had a bit of athlete's foot and I had methylated spirits. Before I left on this trip, I'd cleared this thing out and filled it with whiskey. And the three of us were drinking whiskey at this thing as we were going on to Sicily. The plane landed in Sicily eventually, and I got out and went along and met a little chap there who said, oh, Black Watch, somewhere around about Catania, I think you'll have to make your own way there. And I said, well, not exactly. So I produced my little travel documents again, you see, and my own name being Wilson, and signed by Sir Henry Maitland Wilson. Oh, boy, I was on the next plane to Catania. I arrived in Catania, and Major Riach picked me up. And that was how I joined the Black Watch. And I stayed with the Black Watch then in Sicily, and eventually we came home.
What job did you have with the Black
Watch? Platoon commander, just platoon commander then.
And which company in platoon?
B Company then.
And the platoon?
Now, wait a minute, 13, I think, 13 too.
And did you see any fighting?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Why not?
Well, it was finished. It was finished then. Just, they were invading Italy. Invading Italy then. I went up to the top there. You could see Italy across the straits. And we had about a few weeks there, but rumour kept saying we were going home, and all the jocks kept saying, we've got to wait for the ship with the tartan funnel coming in. And we'll hear those magic words, fall in facing the boat. See, we did, eventually. Don't think the ship had a tartan funnel. But it was an American ship called the Edmund B. Alexandra. And we duly set sail and eventually got through to England. Very crowded ship, because it was packed. You had a breakfast, then you had a dinner. And that was it. Half the chaps slept and the other half were on deck and using the same beds, you see, we were so crowded. And we arrived home without anything eventful happening. Pulled into Liverpool. There was a band playing, but it was pouring with rain. And I could have been home in Wigan in half an hour, but we were put on trains and sent down to Piperswood Camp, Amersham, Buckinghamshire. And we duly went into Piperswood Camp and were accommodated there, and we were all geared up and then sent home on Christmas leave. I was home for Christmas. And then we went back after the leave and started doing our training for the invasion of Europe.
What did that consist of?
Lots of training round about the area, We had actually taken into bombed areas in London and trained in house-to-house fighting and going up sides of walls on loop ropes and all that sort of thing. And it was very hard training. It was very good training. James Oliver, by the way, this time, he'd been promoted to Brigadier. He was commanding 7th Battalion. He'd been promoted to Brigadier 153 Brigade. And then whilst we were there in Amersham, he came back to command 154 Brigade, which was marvellous, because 154 had the 1st Black Watch, the 7th Black Watch and the 7th Argyles. And James had come back to command the 7th Black Watch, which was primarily his battalion. Sorry. Primarily his battalion. And
which division was this?
5-1. And then training went on as normal, and then I can remember vehicles being sent away to be waterproofed and all that sort of thing. Then we were all sent eventually down to a camp. I can't remember the name they gave us. Somewhere near the Thames, I think. And whilst we were in that camp, in bell tents, I remember, the news of the invasion came through. And then we were all put on trains and sent down to Portsmouth area, I think it must have been. A special train, I remember, because it stopped at station and I nipped out to use the telephone to ring my wife up, who was stationed in the Isle of Wight. I could see the Isle of Wight. And Dorothy was stationed in the Isle of Wight, but she'd gone out, so I couldn't get her on the phone. Then eventually we were put onto this ship. And when we got on the ship, there was a little booklet telling us where we were going, which was to France. The odd phrases that were useful and bits of information. And then off we sailed for the beaches. That was about D plus three, I think, somewhere around. And I had a nice dry landing. I walked off my little landing craft into water no more than boot deep. Bit of a shambles, where things were a lot mixed up a little bit. And I was about 24 hours before I found my company. D company I was with then.
And was this Sword Beach or Gold Beach?
Gold. And then we went on then, bustling on.
So it was an easy landing for you?
Well, for me it was ideal. The night after we were shelled, when we were digging slit trenches. The battalion was very good, very strict. Charles Cathcart was CO, absolutely marvellous chap. Everybody washed and shaved, and even in action. You were washed and shaved in the morning. Even in action. The place had to be clean before you left it. Every bit of litter had to be picked up and buried. And God knows what. It was a wonderful battalion. Wonderful. And then eventually we went up to a dreadful place, the Bois de Bama. Dreadful place. And on my left, there was a great gap and a couple of fields, perhaps about 300-400 yards. And the paratroopers were there. And I was extreme left. This gap, then the paratroopers. And then me, and then B Company, all the way around the perimeter. And we stayed there. It was an appalling place. There were dead cows there, blown up with gases. Smell was appalling. There was a dead German about 50, 70 yards in front. We couldn't get out to bury him, really, because of the shelling that was going on. So when the mine throwers, we could hear them fire. We can never hear the things coming.
This is the morning minutes.
Oh, a dreadful noise. They didn't do an awful lot. They were frightening. But it was grim. But one night was absolutely appalling. They attacked, and B Company bore the brunt of the attack there. the mortar platoon used all its stock of mortar shells to borrow them from God knows all sorts. Ian Foggy was a mortar officer. And the Padre, we lost the Padre that night too. Lost a few officers that night. Jim Rennie was another, an awfully nice chap. And we lost quite a few men. We attacked mostly on B Company. We had a bit of a lot of machine gun fire. After the night, I remember this well, we had a dreadful night, and we were standing to in the morning, and we'd all dug in along this bank, and with me in my slit trench was my wireless operator, and the next trench to me was my batman, Lawrence Boyle, and Boyle had been digging all day. He dug himself right into the bank, and he was an Irish boy. He was a cap maker by trade. He came from Belfast. And Stand To came, and I was shouting, "Come on, Stand To, Stand To, Stand To." And my sergeant, Patsy Cunning, wonderful chap, he was shaking everybody out, and a chap named McCrogan was going by. And I said to him, "McCrogan, get Boyle out." And that was my batman. "Get him out." And McCrogan looked at me and said, "If Boyle is in here, sir, he's dead." So I jumped out of my slit trench and went along, and Boyle was dead. And the shell had dropped at the end of the slit trench. And I met him, he'd been digging in, and all the blasts must have gone in. We buried him there, and I made a cross out of a compo box and just put his name on, and we couldn't get his discs because he was right under the, buried completely. But a thing that happened there that'll stick in my mind, that morning after we'd found Boyle dead and we'd in the trench there, a padre came along from the paratroopers, Catholic padre, and he came, funnily enough, he came from Blackpool, almost certainly he came from Blackpool. And he'd bailed out with the paratroopers, taking some faith to bail out without weapons. He walked over that field between us, I told you, the 200 or 300 yards, and it was being shelled intermittently, mortared intermittently. Every so often the Minenwerfers would fire and they'd fall on that field. That padre walked across that field to us, came to me and said, "Is there anything any of you want?" And we were getting very short of cigarettes. I said, "Well, we need some cigarettes." He said, "My chaps have plenty." But in the meantime, he read the burial service over Boyle, my batman. And then that padre went back across that field. And within an hour or two, he came back across that field again to give us some cigarettes, and then went back again across that field. Quite frankly, unless I'd been ordered to, I wouldn't have gone across that field for a gold pig. It was grim. We were being shelled too, but that field seemed to get the brunt of it. Cows, legs...